Live from Utrecht. This is Bitcoin
Explained.
I love it. Sjors, here we are again. It feels very retro. We just recorded three quarters of an episode before you realized you weren't actually recording anything.
Yep. There's this little device, and you have to put the SD card in it. Otherwise, you'll press the record button, and you'll see all the volume and all that stuff. It looks very good, but there's no counter.
Yeah, I think that used to happen almost every time in the first couple of months.
No. So I think we've only done it once.
No,
more than a few minutes.
No, we've certainly done it. What? No, we did it all the time, Sjors.
Oh.
Did you forget about that?
Maybe I suppressed the memory.
Anyways, so this time I hope you're recording and we're going to go for take two.
I see a clock ticking, so that's good.
Nice. We're going to discuss burying soft forks.
All right.
Yeah, this is one of these topics that I sort of knew was a thing that was sometimes discussed by developers, but also based on the discussion that I was sort of, you know, eyeing on the Bitcoin development mailing list, I could tell that it was kind of a niche, not super important, kind of big deal sort of thing that, you know, only developers that are very far into the weeds kind of cared about. So I never really paid attention to it.
But then we were desperate to find a new topic and I found it and you found it interesting.
Yeah, I thought it was actually kind of interesting. It's one of these topics that, you know, it might be niche, but it still has some sort of broader implications about, you know, how do we think about Bitcoin? Or in a way, I've always found protocol changes the most interesting part of Bitcoin because it kind of gives you a very existential idea of what Bitcoin actually is. Like, if it can change, then you can sort of think about, you know, what conditions can you change it then, or what is Bitcoin then? You can get very philosophical about it if you want to, but I don't think we're really going to do that today. But we are going to discuss burying soft forks. So yeah, we have discussed Taproot and Taproot activation in multiple episodes
it's
so far.
It's a 5-episode epic story.
It's like a mini series within our podcast. From start to finish, we sort of covered the whole Taproot activation saga. And in a way, this is a new entry in that mini-series. So I like it.
That's right.
Probably the last one. Probably this will be the last entry because at this point, we're going to discuss, you know, the soft fork happened, activation happened. It all went great. And at this point, the question is sort of, how do we move forward from there? How do we now retroactively kind of deal with the activation code and with Taproot? And that's what burying soft forks is about.
Yeah. So one analogy that can be used, although we'll get to the philosophical discussion about that, is that activation code is a scaffold. It's like when you have when there's a soft fork, it's like building a new house. And when you're building the house, there's a scaffold next to it. And then the question is, what do you do with the scaffold when the house is done? And that's kind of what we're going to talk about. Can we just remove it somehow?
Yeah, so this has happened before, burying soft forks. It's not a completely new concept.
Mm-hmm.
It is being discussed again, at least sort of on GitHub, not really on the Bitcoin dev list this time, I think, because I guess Bitcoin Core developers have already sort of agreed that this is kind of the way to go.
Well, it's still open, so.
All right, so it is being discussed again, but it has happened before. So I'll just let you explain, Sjors, what does it mean? What is burying a soft fork?
Well, I think you wanted to recap first what a soft fork is.
Yeah, sure. Let's start with that. You're right, for those listeners that don't know that.
It's also relevant to explain how the burying works. So
okay.
A soft fork is a tightening of the rules. And intuitively, you might think, what? Why? How do you get new features when you have less rules? Well, we've explained this in earlier episodes, but basically, Bitcoin has a lot of ways to throw away money. And so you can make all sorts of addresses, quote unquote, that you can send coins to, and then anybody can take the money from those addresses. And generally, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, you don't even need a signature. There's just no requirements. You can just take the money from these outputs or addresses, like you say.
And so what a soft fork does in practice, at least some soft forks do, is to say, well, there's now going to be slightly fewer ways to throw away your money. So if you make this specific type of transaction, we're now going to call that Taproot, and you can only spend that with a valid Schnorr signature, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas before the soft fork, you could just take those coins.
Right.
And this ties into the burying of the soft fork, because it turns out that if you look back at the history of the blockchain, and you see how many people have actually thrown away their money in the past in a way that's that would now be called Taproot. Turns out that's only happened once. So there's only one historical transaction that happened before Taproot activated, where somebody sent money to something that we now call a Taproot address, and more importantly, somebody else took that money. And that taking of the money would not be compliant with the modern Taproot rules.
Yes. Well, actually, I'll have to correct you there a little bit. So actually, several people sent money to a Taproot address before Taproot was active.
But only one took it.
Yes. It's only been taken one time. Now, sending to such an address was always okay, of course, and is still okay, and that was never a problem. It's a taken from that address that, since Taproot is active, you cannot do that anymore.
Yep.
But before Taproot was active, you could just take that money.
That's right.
Okay.
And so this presents an opportunity to look at the Bitcoin Core source code, which, you know, currently just says, when you see the blockchain for the first time, you sync the whole thing, you look at the signaling, and then after a while, you've seen that the speedy trial activated, and now you're going to apply the new rules to the new blocks. What you can do instead is say, don't worry about the signaling, just apply the Taproot rules from the Genesis block onwards, pretend that Taproot has always existed, with one exception. And that exception would be hard-coded in the source code, saying, well, Taproot is always active except for this specific block.
Yes, and that block would be the block that includes the transaction that I just mentioned that took these coins. And
yeah.
They were sent to Brink, actually.
Okay.
There's a blog post that was... While we're discussing it, let me just mention that real quick. So it was actually taken by, or at least the Bitcoin developer named 0xb10c. He sort of initiated, and then it was included by F2Pool, and it was sent. So these coins that were sent to Brink at the time.
Oh, that's very nice.
Not very important in the context of the rest of this episode, but
no, and it turns out. Something like this has happened in the past with PIP16 that introduced back in 2012 that introduced pay to script hash. There was also one exception block. So there is precedent of having an exception block in the Bitcoin source code in this way. So the Taproot would just have another exception block.
So let me recap that real quick.
And with SegWit, I just add is there is no exception necessary.
Right.
So SegWit rules can be applied from the Genesis block perfectly. There's no exception.
Right. Yes. Okay. So if you currently run a Bitcoin Core node, better yet, if you sync a Bitcoin Core node, so if you start from the Genesis block, you start from the very first block that, you know, was released by Satoshi, and then you go through the entire blockchain to verify every transaction, every block, then what your Bitcoin Core node is currently doing is at some point it will check if there is blockchain signaling going on. And then it sees that there is, in fact, blockchain signaling going on. And then from a certain block, it will start to enforce the Taproot rules. That's how a Bitcoin Core node right now works when it comes to Taproot. And then this proposal, which has been done with other soft forks before, is that it will actually start applying the Taproot rules from block zero, from the very beginning, with the exception for this one block that has an invalid spend in it under the Taproot rules, and we'll just ignore that. Right? This is the recap. This is how it would work. So what are the benefits of implementing this in Bitcoin Core?
So
why is it better to start from block zero?
Yeah. So I think the first thing to say is that this is not a dramatic benefit that we're going to talk about. It's somewhat marginal. However, we're dealing with very critical code. So the less headache, basically, for developers, the more likely they spend their time finding real bugs. First of all, it makes the code a little bit simpler, but that's very marginal. So instead of saying after this block, do X, it says do X all the time, except for this block.
Right.
And the other side is that it makes testing the code easier. So Bitcoin Core itself has tests that are run in something called the reg test framework from regression. And these tests do is they simulate a fresh blockchain. So with a fresh Genesis block or maybe the real Genesis block, and then they create very low difficulty blocks. So they very quickly can build a blockchain with 100 blocks or 200 blocks on it. And then they can, you know, check all the rules, basically. So there's a test that says, okay, make sure that before Taproot activates, these rules apply. and these blocks are still valid. And then after Taproot activates, you want to, you know, the test might check that the Taproot rules are actually enforced. And so if you just pretend that Taproot has always been there, 1984 style, then basically the test can be simplified because you only need to test for the enforcement of Taproot rules. You don't have to test anymore for pre-activation scenarios. So that's basically a simplification there.
Right. So you've now mentioned two benefits. One of them, it cleans up the actual code of the Bitcoin Core code base. And the other way is it simplifies tests that you might run because now there's less scenarios.
Well, those tests are in the Bitcoin source code too. So yeah, there's fewer permutations to test, right? Especially if you add up multiple soft forks. Like, okay, we have to test before SegWit, but after SegWit, but before Taproot. Those kind of combinations.
Okay, so I think we can actually summarize it as it just cleans up the code. It's a code cleanup.
Yep.
And the idea is essentially that the soft fork activated so long ago that it doesn't really make a difference. Am I saying
that
right?
Well, we'll get to that. I think there's a second part to the cleanup that I want to emphasize, and then we can say that analogy. The second thing is, now that we've said Taproot has always existed, as in, you know, the 1984 example, we still have these signals that happened in blocks. And, well, there's no point in looking at those signals anymore because we've already said SegWit is always there, or Taproot is always there, so why do we look at the signals? So the second cleanup would be to simply not check those signals anymore, so to remove the speedy trial, essentially, in this case. And that has, again, somewhat of a benefit for developers. What it allows developers to do is say, hey, we want to change the activation mechanism itself. Maybe we want to change the BIP9 system to something more like a BIP8 system. And then we can just change the code, basically. We don't have to copy the code and write a new piece of code. We can change it entirely because the code is no longer used for anything. So it's safer to just change it. Again, that's marginal, but it's still nice.
Yeah, and it's also still code cleanup, right? That's the benefit, essentially.
Yeah, so especially if you understand that BIP8, at least the simple version of BIP8 with LUT is false that we talked about, is essentially simpler than BIP9. So yeah, you can actually maybe remove some code net, but I don't know.
Well, that wasn't really the point I was getting at. I was just, in general, just not having to check for the activation signals for this specific soft fork.
Yeah, it saves, again, a little bit of code.
Yeah. So that makes, that makes a lot of sense to me. I can barely think of any downsides to that. And that is sort of what you were getting at earlier. You mentioned scaffolds, right? I think that was in this recording, not in the one we erased.
Yeah, we brought it up in this recording.
Or maybe in both. Anyway, so yeah, so for the second benefit, you're basically removing the scaffolds. It activated, everyone agreed that it activated on this specific block.
Arguably both are scaffolds, because the idea that you're going to start applying rules from a certain block is also a scaffold compared to just applying the rules all the time.
Well,
I think that's
where the discussion comes in. So we're ready for sort of to point out where some of the disagreement stems from, right?
We're ready.
Right, so we've just mentioned that the main benefits are all kind of code cleanup related. They benefit, you could argue they benefit developers, you know, indirectly. Anything that benefits developers benefits users, because developers work for users, but
yeah,
they are things that benefit developers and they shouldn't affect users, and they arguably don't affect users. But there are some edge cases where it could actually affect users. So when we were discussing at the beginning of the episode, I think that was this one and not the one we erased, I hope. We mentioned anyways that a soft fork can in fact split the blockchain, or even a hard fork.
No, I don't think we've said that in this recording yet. So yeah.
Okay, maybe, do you want to point it out? Well, I'll just point it out. So basically a soft fork, either a soft fork or a hard fork, can split the blockchain between users that are using the old rules and users that are using the new rules. Now, the great benefit of soft fork is that if a majority of hash power is enforcing the soft fork rules, then the chain should not split, then the chain should, then the upgrade should be backwards compatible, as they call it.
Yeah.
All right, now.
Which means that people do not have to upgrade their nodes immediately when there's a soft fork, and that's kind of nice because we don't want to force people to upgrade.
Yeah, they can upgrade a bit later if they want, or potentially even never. Okay. In this case, a new Bitcoin Core node would assume that the taproot rules have always applied.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what this means is that, and this is the edge case, if there is a very big reorg, so someone starts mining on top of a block from a year ago or whatever it is, and that someone may, you know, aliens have come to Earth, I think is the analogy you
Either the aliens or the or some secret government agency.
Yeah, someone has a lot of hash power for whatever reason. They start mining on a block from a year ago, and they actually claim the longest chain. Now, in that chain, they make a transaction that is... And they do this before the original taproot activation block. They make a transaction that breaks the taproot rules.
That's right.
So all nodes, all Bitcoin Core nodes, for example, will accept this chain because it's the longest valid chain. While new Bitcoin Core nodes who are enforcing all their taproot rules, who are enforcing taproot rules from the beginning, they will reject this chain because it's an invalid chain.
Yeah, so basically from their perspective, when a new chain appears, what the node will do is it will just roll back its blockchain. It will just like basically do everything in reverse. And when all the coins that are spent are recreated, until it gets to the forking point, and then follows the longest chain all the way up, checking the rules for that new longest chain. And so if it goes before Taproot activation, then Taproot rules didn't apply. If you're an old node, you would say, okay, Taproot is no longer active because you've gone back in time, and those blocks can just do whatever they want. But if you're a new node under this little cleanup, you're going to say, no, Taproot rules are always active. So if anything violates Taproot rules, I'm going to complain. So that means if the new blocks are written, you know, at the low enough, then it's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
And it could even be worse. Like Taproot could never activate at all, according to the old nodes. Because if you go back before the speedy trial, if the aliens basically reorg back to 2020, then replay again, they might just decide to not signal for Taproot and say Taproot never happened. Now, the reason we don't care about that this much is that this scenario is really, really, really bad. And so the analogy might be to say, well, if all of the Netherlands is flooded, are we really going to argue about this street name in Rotterdam that, you know, we have issues about?
Right, yes. The arguments, you explained it clearly, I think, but still to reiterate, the argument is that if a reorg happens that is this bad, then Bitcoin is screwed either way and it's not worth considering even, essentially, right?
Or maybe at least you probably have to do some human intervention to decide what on earth you're going to do about this situation, because it means that probably lots of people's coins won't exist anymore. All the transactions may or may not be replayed again. So unless you bought Bitcoin in 2011 and you just hodled and never moved them, you're going to be impacted by this event. And the whole point of a money system, you know, kind of goes away if that much changes. It's very similar to in a fiat system. If suddenly your bank account is zero or a million, depending on some random historical glitch, are you really going to just keep on going with the bank balance, or are you going to do something else? It's a big disaster if this happens.
Yeah, well, so on the other side of the debate is, for example, Eric Voskal, who's the lead developer of LibBitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
And he argues, or at least one of his arguments is that this threshold that you just, like, at what point is this the case? At what point doesn't it matter anymore that there's a big reorg? Like, is it after a day? Is it after 2 days? Is it after a week, 2 weeks? Like, where is this threshold?
Yeah.
And, you know, he values consistency a lot when it comes to these kinds of things. And his argument would be, or is, I think, well, I need to be careful to represent his arguments because I might.
Well,
he might disagree with my explanation of it.
We could say a hypothetical argument could be whether or not somebody makes the argument.
Maybe that's better. Yeah. The only consistent argument there is that there is no threshold. It's just for each, you know, each block you need to assign a probability that it's going to make reorgs harder. So the more confirmations you have, it will just make a reorg harder and harder and harder. And that's kind of how we apply it already. Like, you know, one confirmation is not as secure as two confirmation is not as secure as three. And this change would imply that there's some hard cutoff to that logic rather than it's just always going to be incrementally safer to wait longer.
Now, there is actually a real cutoff because very old versions of Bitcoin Core use checkpoints, but that hasn't been done for many, many years. But a checkpoint basically meant that that specific block had to exist. So there are a couple of blocks in the source code that say this block must exist, otherwise the chain is not valid.
Yes, but that's not, you know, that is itself also controversial.
Yeah,
that's
and I think it's good that those don't exist anymore.
Right, exactly.
But this is not as strong as a checkpoint. The only thing you could argue, and I think maybe that's what Voskal was arguing, is that the fact that you're now retroactively, in a certain sense, activating Taproot is in a way a hard fork.
No, it is in a way a checkpoint. I mean, it's like...
Well, a checkpoint says this specific block has to exist.
Yes,
but... This just says these rules have to apply.
Right.
Regardless of what the blocks are.
No, sure, but it does have sort of the similar implications for it. Because you're assuming that before that block, no split could have possibly happened. Otherwise, you would have to check, right? Am I saying that right? I think so.
Well, I mean, the problem with checkpoints is you could have almost completely arbitrary like rules, right? It gives too much power to the people who decide what is a checkpoint. But I think in the case of Taproot, you don't have that discussion because it's not that by having this rule or by not having this rule that Taproot is always active. It doesn't really matter that much. It's like there's not a specific person who stands to benefit from whether or not that rule happens. We can't predict what the disaster is going to look like. So that's why I think it's not as bad as a checkpoint.
So, yeah, whether or not it's a checkpoint or some kind of checkpoint or some kind of subcategory of a checkpoint is maybe not the important part. The important part here is that one group of developers, or I guess mostly in Bitcoin Core, figure that if there's a reorg this big, then Bitcoin is screwed anyways. While someone like Voskal will argue, you know, there's no single point where you can make that argument. There's no point where Bitcoin will be dead if the reorg is that bad. It just, you know, gets incrementally worse for, you know, every extra block that's being reorged.
Yeah.
But there's no objective point you can point to. And therefore, the only sort of logic that you can apply is simply longest valid chain. That's what we'll accept to be Bitcoin.
So this reminded me of the other argument that you can have here. Which is, do we look at only the blockchain? Like, should nodes only look at the blockchain, or should nodes keep into account sort of the social consensus? And that gets back to what signaling means. Is signaling something that must occur on the blockchain and then a soft fork is active? Or is it a way to coordinate the activation of a new set of rules in a point in... And so, in essence, does a soft fork activate on a chain, or does it activate in a chronological point in, you know, the space-time continuum? So can we say, as of November 21, or whatever date it was, 2021, Taproot is active. If you produce blocks in the future, even no matter what the height of those new blocks is, it's still after November 21, 2022, and therefore you should know that Taproot is active and you should just enforce it. That is, of course, also a philosophical question you can have. If you agree with the latter, if you say Taproot should be considered active after a chronological point in time, well, then this deep reorg is not a problem because you'll enforce Taproot.
Yo, what is going on, guys? We are proud to have Voltage as a sponsor of this episode. How many of you developers out there have wanted a streamlined infrastructure provider for your particular project? Well, I'll tell you what, Voltage is the Bitcoin infrastructure provider you have been looking for that makes building on Bitcoin quick and easy, whether it's Bitcoin nodes, Lightning nodes, BTC Pay, and so much more. But don't take it from me. Just ask the guys over at Amboss, Sphinx, Podcast Index, and Thunder Games, and so many others that you guys already know and love. Their enterprise-grade products make it fast and easy to build, deploy, and scale your next project. So make it easy on yourself. Even normie plebs can use the dashboard or API. Don't wait before the next block confirmation. Let your team focus on building great products and let Voltage handle all the rest. Voltage is your go-to zero management Bitcoin infrastructure solution. Yo, what is going on, plebs? We're going to take a break from our programming to tell you about the resurrection of our print magazine, starting with the El Salvador issue. Starting this fall, Bitcoin Magazine will be available on newsstands nationwide and at retail stores such as Barnes and Noble. Don't want to get off your couch though? No problem. You can also go to store.bitcoinmagazine.com. So skip the line and get each issue shipped directly to your front door with our annual subscription. I'm talking 4 issues a year that contain exclusive interviews and profiles with leading Bitcoiners, actionable insights on the state of the market, breaking news and cultural trends, along with powerful photos and artwork from the best artists in the world. Subscribe today and get 21% off using code podcast at checkout. That's PODCAST, podcast at checkout.
Well, I think there's 2 issues here, or at least there's 1 thing to point out, and I think that's what you're getting at. So there are sort of 2 visions on what the activation logic is in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone agrees, you know, basically what a soft fork is, and that's you've explained it a couple of minutes ago, and I think everyone will agree on that. But then there's the activation of the soft fork, sort of the activation logic, like you must signal the signaling logic itself, which is something some developers will itself consider a soft fork, while other developers will argue that's the word you used before, that's scaffolding. That shouldn't be considered a consensus change. So I think that the argument, at least if you hold the second opinion of removing the signaling logic from the code, that's a much easier argument to make, which I also mentioned before, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we presented these 2 parts of the burying, right? So the first part is we're going to apply the rules from Genesis, and the second part is we don't check the rules. And in that order, that's one way to look at it in that order, but you can look at it in the other order. I guess that's what you're saying now, if you just drop the signaling requirement.
Yeah, but you were making a point about social consensus applying to time. Well, but you can still apply social consensus to the blockchain itself. So you can still argue that there's no reason for the signaling other than informing people that a soft fork is happening, while still applying it to the actual blockchain, and therefore accepting that a soft fork didn't happen if there's a big reorg, even though we're past a certain date.
You could,
right?
But if you go back to the history of soft forks, you know, we did that in in another episode, but basically the reason miners started signaling, you know, that wasn't the case. The earliest soft forks in Satoshi's code were just activating at a certain height. That was a problem. So the idea was to have miners signal for it, and there were various ways to do that signaling, and eventually we ended up with BIP9. But the reason for the signaling is to make sure that miners actually upgrade and are actually ready. And there's no reason to assume that with a big reorg, they're suddenly unready. They would have to downgrade their software, basically.
Well, that's not something everyone agrees on, sure.
That's fine. That's sort of the point I'm trying to make. If that is your interpretation, if the interpretation is we use the signaling in the actual history of Earth, just to say, okay, now all the miners are ready, they have the latest software, they can enforce Taproot, then there's no reason to assume that when there's a deep reorg, they're certainly unready. But you can also have the sort of the blockchain-centric perspective where you say, no, there is no reality outside the blockchain and outside this code. And in that case, you might say, no, if time is undone, it's like real time travel, we've really changed history and Taproot never happened, or did, or some other time.
That's
the potential discussion you can have.
Yeah, well, that's interesting you bring it up. I think that's right. So that these are sort of 2 ways of looking at signaling, whether it's informing miners or really, yeah, whether it really means readiness signaling, which is definitely a term that has been used. But recently during the Taproot debate, there was also sort of this idea that signaling is really for users. So users know that a certain change will activate, which also allows them to fork off if they disagree with the change, for example, and that's sort of really the reason for signaling. So I think we're getting really into the weeds at this point. I think it's interesting, but
we might
be losing some listeners by now.
That's fine. We've shown the listeners, where the weed is.
Right. Where the weed is?
Yeah, maybe not the best analogy. We've shown them very deep into the rabbit hole. They can explore more for themselves by just reading these mailing list threads. We'll probably put them in the show notes.
Yeah, there's one other thing we do need to bring up. Okay, we're jumping around now, so the episode's getting confusing. Sorry, people. But there is this other, sort of what it ultimately comes down to, this discussion, I think, is whether burying a soft fork, as we've explained throughout this episode, whether that should be considered a consensus change or not, and by extension, whether it should be considered, whether it should be a BIP, Bitcoin Improvement Proposal. So if you see it as
a consensus BIP, because you can have an informational BIP that's not a consensus BIP.
Yeah, can you though?
You can basically write a BIP that says, hey, if you're writing a full note, you could consider burying the soft fork because it'll make your life easier. But keep in mind that, you know, if this time travel thing happens, you have a problem.
It's not really the point of BIPs, though, Shores, is it?
Well, we've done an episode about BIPs. Yeah, so there are informational BIPs, and there are consensus BIPs.
Well, but they need to be relevant for other nodes.
They are. It's good to explain to other nodes what you've done in your implementation that, you know, under extreme circumstances can make a difference.
Very general informational BIP of this is a thing you can do, but then that BIP doesn't need to include the specific block height, right? That doesn't require. Well, that's the debate then. Is this a consensus change? In other words, if there would be this big of a reorg, should we expect all nodes to accept this reorg or reject it? Do the same thing?
Yeah, so this comes down to the little street in Rotterdam situation that I was talking about.
Hang on, let me finish the sentence. Or is this just a thing that developers can do as a shortcut in their own code? And then essentially, if it does go wrong, that's the wrong problem. That's a problem of that specific implementation. That would essentially mean that specific implementation has forked itself of the network. I think if you really go into this debate, that's sort of ultimately what it's about. And that's why I mentioned at the beginning of this episode that, you know, consensus changes are kind of interesting because it sort of says something about how do you define Bitcoin? What is Bitcoin?
Yeah.
And this is an example where that actually applies. Like, if in this unlikely scenario would happen, then would the buried version be the real Bitcoin? The nodes that have the buried soft fork, would that be the real Bitcoin? Or would they fork themselves off of the real Bitcoin network?
Yeah, so we're talking about a specific deep reorg that actually violates the Taproot rule, right? Because there is a good chance that they don't violate Taproot in the deep reorg.
Sure.
So I think in general, it's a good idea to think about an extreme scenario like this. But if you do that, you'll end up thinking, you know, you'll end up seeing this is a really big problem. There's all sorts of things we need to solve in such an event. And this little thing about buried consensus rules is somewhere on the to-do list of that giant project of, okay, what are we going to do? Like, is there some threshold that we say if this alien shows up? I guess in general, we need a scenario what to do with the aliens. The aliens might have extreme hash power. They might be able to just completely, you know, double spend everyone on the planet because they have some alien ASIC that can double spend any block and at any depth, and they can create reorgs out of spite. So, or the secret government agency, basically. It might be useful to have a plan for that. I just think that this won't be the most interesting part of the plan because it's a really bad situation. And it probably means Bitcoin would be completely broken in that case. But maybe not. Maybe there is a rational way to deal with it.
That's the difference of opinion, right? Some people like Eric Fosco will say Bitcoin isn't broken. Bitcoin is working as intended. The longest valid chain still applies. There was a long reorg that's part of the Bitcoin consensus system.
Yeah, but the question is, can you use it for practical transactions if that can happen again and again and again and again? I would probably say no. It's just the same reason with lots of altcoins that try to use SHA-256, and those altcoins are completely, you know, yeah, technically they're still valid chains. It's just that nobody uses them anymore. So So I think it's good to have some sort of thought about what to do with the alien invasion. Yeah.
So is it, I want to close off this episode, but I want to ask you then, Charles Bruce Lee, like, should this be considered consensus change?
No, I think this...
Or is this a this is sort developer of, shortcut?
I think this is...
At their own risk.
Yeah, I think it's a developer shortcut, but it's that... The idea of a one-year reorg is undefined behavior, I think. So I think there is no consensus rule for a one-year reorg. That's my opinion. It's just... It's a disaster that's not been worked out. There's just no contingency plan. It's like saying, what do we do if the 55 nukes go off over Amsterdam? You know, what's the... Can you still go into a hospital without a mask? I don't know. It's undefined. But maybe it should be defined.
I mean, I guess I disagree with you. I think it's defined as long as valid chain. That's it.
That's fine.
Well, then I guess that's the episode, Charles.
That's right.
We've reached the point. We've kept pulling the threads to the point where sort of the disagreement emerges, I think, of the broader discussion.
Yeah.
I hope our listeners could follow. I think it was maybe a bit messy because it's a complicated topic. But I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, especially the fact that we're talking about hypothetical time machines in a situation where we lost one recording. In other words, we also have this hypothetical time machine. Did we say this before? Was it really set? Because we said it without recording it.
I'm sure that didn't help, yeah.
So anyway, thank you all for listening to Bitcoin Explained.